Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University, offering online bachelor completion programs, including business, education, nursing, and more. Information is available at viterbo.edu/completion.
Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu.
So I went down to my favorite store, picked out three or four shirts or more, a pair of pants and a striped tie, and the man came by and said, "Yes, sir, cash or charge?" I said, "Just put it on my credit card." "Write that dude up." "Oh, convenient. Now put that card away in a drawer," and I never charged $1 more. Then one day in the mail, I got this bill.
This is a credit edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine without financial planner Kevin McKinley this week. He's taking some time off for the holidays. But we have a nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scores, identity theft, who will have information and advice on any credit-related issue, from the security breach at Target to raising your credit score. What's your credit question? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guest. John Alzheimer is president of the Alzheimer Group, LLC, and the credit blogger for Mint.com. His website is johnalzheimer.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks a lot for being with us on this holiday. Let's talk about the newsiest item right off the bat. Target said hackers got credit card and debit card information from some 40 million customers between Black Friday and December 15th. Do we know how this happened?
We do not know how it happened yet, but given the fact that the exposure lasted 19 days, tells us a couple of things. A, that they were very clandestine in their hacking, because if Target would have found out immediately, it wouldn't have lasted 19 days. Second is the information continues to evolve, but it looks like as of right now, the only information that was breached would have been account number information, so your credit card account number, your debit card account number, depending on what you use to shop at Target, and no personal information, meaning your name, address, social, date of birth. None of that information was breached. So that's a little bit of a silver lining in an otherwise pretty disturbing story.
Yeah. Well, people who used their credit card at Target during that time are supposed to monitor their statements and look for anything suspicious. What do we do if we see something?
Well, I would have gone one step further. I would have already canceled my card and had it reissued. This isn't a scenario where the information was breached and we just don't know what's going to happen with it. The information was breached and then almost immediately was up for sale on black market websites. And there are already reports of some people who have had their credit and debit card accounts fraudulently used by the people who are buying this information off these websites. So I would have gone all the way to the end of the finish line on this one. I would have had my bank reissue a card if I was someone who used a card, or any slice of plastic for that matter, at a Target during the exposure period. But if you haven't, you're going to have to wait a couple days, because banks are closed, I think, a half day today, and then they're going to be closed all day tomorrow. So you're going to have to wait till Thursday, and you may not want to close your card while in the middle of holiday travel, because then how are you going to pay for things?
Yeah.
So yeah, I wouldn't wait for your statement to show up to determine whether or not transactions were possibly fraudulent. I would get online right now and look at your either pending or posted transactions, and they're almost in real time. So it's going to be an effective way of determining whether or not someone did in fact get your information and is in fact using it.
Well, let's say we do get a new credit card. If everything does check out even after we get a new credit card, are we in the clear or not quite?
You know, you're in the clear from this Target breach issue, but you're never really in the clear ever. The form of credit card that we use in the U.S. has the same type of technology as the old cassette tapes they used to stick in their cassette player in your car. how many people have those anymore? There are much more sophisticated credit card technologies, but they're not very prevalent in the United States. The so-called pin and chip cards that are really popular in Europe, they just haven't made any sort of penetration in the U.S. And so just because you may have solved the problem associated with the Target breach, it does not mean that you're out of the woods and that you're never going to be a victim again. Next month, we're going to be talking about some other major data breach somewhere else. It seems like one happens every 2 or 3 months, and your information is almost always at risk, which is why there are two very, very aggressive federal laws that cap your liability if your credit or debit card has been stolen, because I think lawmakers realize that there's really no way to truly stamp out fraud and data breaches.
I did read that the U.S. has, our information here is easier to hack than it is in other countries. Is that true?
Considerably. Yeah, well, don't even think about it. I mean, look at all the stuff that we voluntarily put out on Facebook, right? Date of birth, that's one of the four pieces of information you need to commit fraud. Name, address, that's very easy to find. And if I'm willing to spend a few bucks, I can just buy your social security number. So really, being a target is something, no pun intended, being a target is something that we have grown comfortable living with. It's just a matter of reducing our exposure. And if we do find out that something has happened, that we react quickly, and in many cases, our liability, financial liability anyways, is capped. So I just don't think that there's any way right now with the way that we voluntarily give out our information that we're ever truly going to be, you know, safe from identity theft.
And we'll talk more specifically about ways to protect ourselves from identity theft. But in this particular case, we were people who got hassled here were people that were just using their credit cards at a reputable discount or, you know, department store.
Extremely reputable. No, and no one is accusing Target. Even the most kind of avid consumer advocates are not accusing Target of having lackadaisical security. Hackers, these guys are no joke. If you look at the names of companies in the past 5 years that have had their databases breached by hackers, it is a who's who among companies. Target's the latest. The New York Yankees, DSW, Choice Point, Sony PlayStation, twice. And it's just these databases are not 100% fully secure simply because hackers evolve and they are very, very clever at what they do.
So is it safe to shop at Target again?
It is definitely safe to shop at Target. And here's why it's safe to shop at Target. A, you can use cash at Target. And I realize people don't use cash anymore, but you could certainly use cash at Target and there's no issues there at all. B, they apparently have closed the loop on this fraud exposure. So if you're using a slice of plastic today at Target, you should be just fine. And C, even if there was a part two to this Target breach, you're still pretty well capped as far as liability goes because of the Fair Credit Billing Act and the Electronic Funds Transfer Act. So I would not allow this to stymie my shopping efforts. If I want something at Target and I want to pay with a credit card, I'm going to drive to Target and I'm going to pay with a credit card. It's that simple.
Well, as we move on to some other topics, what do you advise someone like me? I don't think I shopped at Target during that time, but I'm not absolutely positive. What do I do?
Well, you can find out. Here's how you can find out. Log into your account. I'm sure you use a credit card, you know, a primary choice of a credit card or your debit card. Log into your account online and look at your transactions, and you can tell very quickly if you did shop at Target and if you did when you shopped at Target, and hopefully you would recognize the amount. You know, oh yeah, I did buy some plates or I did buy a CD or I did buy something at Target. That transaction makes sense. If there's anything on there that does not make sense or anything that postdates your shopping activity with Target that doesn't make sense, then you've got about half a business day today to get on the phone and notify your credit card issuer that or your debit card issuer that something is awry and that you need to notify them. You're formally notifying them of possible fraudulent use. They'll close your card, so be aware of that if you're going to use it over the next couple of days. And they'll get one in the mail back to you so you can hopefully not skip a beat after Christmas.
And if we didn't already cancel our cards that we used at Target, if we did, you're saying that we should consider doing that?
I would strongly consider it. Normally, with data breaches normally happen one of three ways. Either A, the party that breached the data didn't do anything with the data, that they really just did the breach almost as a show of strength and as a way to show off. So nothing ever comes of it. Number two is the data gets breached, and then all of a sudden we don't hear anything from anybody until a couple of years later because the fraudsters know that the heat is on and they want to wait till someone else is in the news for a data breach before they start selling the information. And then number three, which is what happened this time, is the information was breached, and it is a fact that the information is currently being sold on black market websites. So it's not like it might happen. It is currently happening, and that's why I think you have to go ultra-aggressive and call your issuer, even if you haven't been the victim of fraud yet, your information is at risk. And I would just be proactive about it instead of being reactive about it when you do find something 3 or 4 months down the road. Go ahead and get the card numbers changed. Don't forget to change all the auto billing and things that are auto debited, because that's just a pain to do, and I understand that. But it's better to be safe than sorry.
Let's take a call from Bill in Lancaster. Hello, Bill.
Hi. I've often wondered this, and this Target thing kind of brings it to the fore in my thoughts. Would one be better off to have in-store cards for the 4 or 5 stores that you shop at and use them and only them at those stores, or would you be better off with one generic card to do all of your transactions, especially with fear of having your information being stolen at the store?
John?
So that question has a lot of meat on the bones. In-store cards, which are formally referred to as retail store credit cards, so they either have a Target brand or a Macy's brand or a Gap brand on the card, the interest rates on those cards on average are about 10 percentage points higher than interest rates on general use credit cards, those issued by banks and credit unions and such. So from a cost perspective, if you're carrying a balance, it's definitely better to carry a balance on a general use credit card like a Visa or a MasterCard or a Discover, because it's going to be less expensive debt to carry. Having said that, retail store cards are perfectly fine if you don't carry balances, and because they are in fact credit cards, albeit with a different brand on the front, you still have your liability capped for fraudulent use at $50. And most of all four of the major credit card networks, Visa, MasterCard, Amex, and Discover, have zero liability policies. And so even though the law allows them to hit you for $50, they choose to hit you for nothing. So you can use a retail store credit card, you can use a general use credit card, and you're still protected either way. There's an entirely different credit score discussion to have here about that. You're better off using fewer cards, because then you have fewer cards with balances. And if you're making major purchases like flat panel televisions or furniture where you're going to run up a large balance, then you're going to want to choose whatever card has the highest credit limit, because balance to limit ratio is a very important factor in credit scoring systems. And you don't want to accidentally lower your score simply because you're using a card that's got a low limit to make a major purchase.
We are talking with John Alzheimer. He's a nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft. He is president of the Alzheimer Group. He works for CreditSesame.com, and he is the credit blogger for Mint.com. And if you have a credit-related question for him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Have you ever noticed any fraudulent charges on your credit statements? How about your credit report? What happened, and what did you do about it? How concerned are you about having your credit information stolen, like this latest breach with Target? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
So I went down to my favorite store, picked out 3 or 4 shirts or more, a pair of pants and a striped tie, and the man came by and said, "Yes, sir, cash or charge?"
This is a special credit edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off this week. We are very happy to have with us, though, a nationally recognized expert on all things credit, John Alzheimer. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take another caller. Mike in Hancock is with us now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing, Joy? Good show.
Thanks.
I just got a credit card. Capital One was offering a $300 credit card at 0% interest. I'm not credit card savvy. I'm not, you know, and it was with a $25 minimum payment. So I've been making my payments and everything, and every time I'm trying to get that $300 paid off, they keep adding money to my account, and I was just trying to get my credit more established because I just did that, you know, after all the years and having credit problems and identity theft. And I don't want the credit card. I just thought I'd just get my credit score higher. But every time I make my, how do you get them to stop giving me more money? I just want to try to get my credit score higher.
So they're giving you a higher credit limit, Mike? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, they keep mm-hmm. adding it on. Like let's say, okay, I've got a $300 credit limit. So I'll make, in 2 months, I'll make a minimum payment of $25. So I figured then, you know, I'm at 300, then I pay off 50, and I should be at 250. And then I get my statement, and I got the $50 back I just paid.
I'm not sure I understand, John. Do you?
Not really. Your credit limit it stays the same. So if you, it sounds like you have a credit limit of 300, but if you're making $25 a month payment, you also have a balance on it. So is it the balance that keeps going up every month, or is it just the limit?
Yeah. It keeps it goes right back to, you know, I'll pay 50, and then I'll get a statement. And I'm thinking it would be, if it was 300, I figure it would be 250. Mm-hmm. But it says credit available. So they put the $50 back on there that I just paid.
Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's paying interest. I mean, so the balance doesn't necessarily go down $50 because of the interest, John?
Yeah. Did you say that it was an interest free card?
Yeah, 0% APR by Capital One.
Okay,
Visa.
So then there shouldn't be any interest. Oh. It's pretty easy to see what the transactions were on the account, and there should also be information about any fees that are being added to your balance every single month that might be chewing up what you're paying down. Can I offer an alternative, not only for you, but also for listeners in the future, if they want to get something kind of a very easy type of account to get that won't kind of spin out of control like that? And these are pretty under the radar. There's a type of a loan that you can get with credit unions called credit builder loans. They're a little bit safer than credit cards simply because credit cards can be tempting, and most credit cards do not have 0% interest, and the interest rate on a credit card is usually, on average, anywhere between 15 and 16%. So it's pretty pricey. A credit builder loan is a very, very small loan, usually around $500 to $1,000, extended by a credit union. What they do is they will extend the loan to you, but they won't actually give you the money. They'll put it into an interest-bearing account, and then you'll make payments usually for about a year to pay off the very, very nominal balance. Every single month that you're making a payment, they're reporting that on-time payment to the credit reporting agency. So the effect is that you're actually adding a positive item to the credit report, which obviously helps with your credit score and obviously helps to build a longer and more impressive credit history. After you've made all your payments, then they actually release the funds to you with interest, the interest that you accrued. It's not going to be much, but it's better than a stick in the eye. And then you can now use that money to either pay off credit card debt or, you know, make a home improvement or just stick it into a savings account for an emergency fund. So you've essentially accomplished the same thing, but you've also done so at a very, very nominal cost while doing business with a credit union. And most people have very good experiences when dealing with credit unions.
Good luck, Mike. Thanks for the call. Al in Muskego asks, is debit riskier than credit because it has direct access to the bank account?
Well, he answered his own question with the second part of it. And look, I recognize that people use the word love when they're talking about their debit cards. People love their debit cards because they offer budgetary controls. There are no late fees. There is no interest. There is no due date. So people love their debit cards for those reasons. Now, having said that, if you were to stack a debit card against a credit card as far as fraud protections, then the credit card whips it hands down. And here's why. When you use a credit card, that's not actually your money. That's the bank's money. And if any fraud occurs, it's the bank's money that's been stolen, not your money. And the Fair Credit Billing Act caps your liability at $50, but all the networks have zero liability policies. So really, you're not out a dime. It's just a little bit of inconvenience. Debit card, you cannot say the same thing. Yes, your liability is capped, but that is your money that has been taken out of the account, and that's money that you're depending on to cover other transactions, to pay rent, to buy groceries, to pay bills, and that money is currently not available while you're waiting for your bank to credit your account that amount, and that can take a couple of weeks. It's not instantaneous. And if other transactions are not able to clear, meaning that you've written bad checks or you've gone into a negative balance position, you're going to get hit with over-limit fees. If you're writing bad checks, the merchant is going to hit you for return check fees. It is a disaster simply because the money is yours versus the money belonging to the bank.
Now, I was reading the rest of Al's email, and I missed this perhaps. If the liability limit for credit is $50, mm-hmm. what is the liability limit for a debit card?
It's $50 if you notify them immediately. If you don't notify them, then it's $500. But remember that don't fall in love with a cap on the liability. That's not the issue. The issue is what happens to. Let me give you a scenario. What happens at 5 o'clock this afternoon if all of a sudden you log into your bank account and you see, oh my gosh, there are 6 or 7 transactions on my debit card that are fraudulent, and it's for hundreds of dollars. Mm. What are you going to do? Who are you going to call?
Yeah, I'm going
to
freak out. Yeah,
there's no one to call because mm-hmm. the banks are closed, and who are you going to call tomorrow? Nobody, because the banks are closed tomorrow too. So all the while, this fraudster is sitting there doing his thing with your debit card, just slowly bleeding it dry, because they're going to continue to go until the transactions start getting declined by the merchant because of no funds. So then on Thursday, you're going to call the bank, and then you're going to file a claim. You're going to have to fill out some paperwork, and then eventually you will get your money back because you have the protections of the Electronic Funds Transfer Act. At the same time, you're expecting that money to be there to cover things like, you know, your auto debit for your cable bill, your auto debit for your cell phone bill. Plus, you got to put gas in your car because you're traveling to so-and-so's house for the holidays. So this is the problem when it's a debit card versus when it's a credit card. Credit card, you may have $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 of available credit. So even if you have someone who's using it fraudulently, you can still use it. And then when the bank opens on Thursday, you call them, hey, look, I need you to reissue me a card. They'll credit your account immediately. And most of the big credit card issuers, Amex, they're really good about this. They'll just FedEx you a new card, so you'll have it literally within 24 hours, and you don't even skip a beat.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Ulzheimer. He is the president of Ulzheimer Group, LLC, works for CreditSesame.com, and is a credit blogger for Mint.com. And this is a special credit edition of On Your Money. So if you have any credit-related questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Kurt emails, I own my own home and car. I have 3 credit cards and no need for additional credit at this time. Is it a good idea to freeze my credit with the credit bureaus? Will that help prevent identity theft? Is that a safe thing to do?
That is actually, I'm very impressed with that question, because very few people know about credit freezing, or what's also referred to as a security freeze. A security freeze, let me explain what a security freeze is. Every single state has a law in place that requires the credit reporting agencies to make available the ability to freeze your credit reports. And this is different than credit monitoring. We see a lot of advertisements on the television and on the radio trying to sell credit monitoring subscription services. This is entirely different. A credit freeze essentially takes your credit reports out of circulation, and no new lender with whom you do not have a relationship with, they can't pull your credit report. So it is proactive defense of your credit information, because you've basically said it's out of circulation. Pretend like it's, you know, you taking a file out of a file cabinet. It's not there. Now, in Wisconsin, if you are not the victim of identity theft, then you have to pay to freeze your credit reports. And you have three of them, one at Experian, one at Equifax, and one at a company called TransUnion. And so if you truly want to be comprehensive in your defense of your credit report, then you're going to want to freeze all three of them. And the fee for placing a freeze on a credit report for Wisconsin residents is $10 per credit report. That's not monthly. That's just a flat fee, $10. So $30 is what it will cost you to freeze all three of your credit reports. Okay, so now that your credit reports are frozen, you're merrily moving along, and all of a sudden in 2 years you're like, oh, wait a minute, you know what? I want to refinance my mortgage because the interest rates are great. Or, hey, you know what? I need a new car, so I'm going to have to go out and I want to get pre-qualified for an auto loan. You're going to have to unfreeze your credit reports, because even when you apply for credit, the lender is still not going to have access to them because they're essentially out of circulation. So you're going to have to, well, we call it thawing because it's the opposite of freezing, but essentially you're putting them back into circulation. There is a cost involved with doing that. Again, $10 per credit report. So it's going to cost you $30 to put them back into circulation, and then they'll refreeze after the transaction, and then you're good to go. I really, really like the security freeze as the option, because it prevents identity theft from happening regarding credit, where credit monitoring, which is just the monitoring of activity on a credit report, lets you know after something has happened. So one is proactive and the other is reactive.
Mm-hmm. What though if we do have, we're going to apply for credit, so we can't freeze at this moment. How should we monitor our credit score or our credit, the credit bureaus?
Yeah, so there's a couple ways to do it, and it all depends on how aggressive you want to get. And you can go from one end of the spectrum to the other. You have some people who've never seen their own credit reports, which is just very, very scary. And they just simply have no interest in monitoring their credit. Then you have kind of what I would consider to be kind of like entry level credit monitoring, which is you're just claiming your free credit reports that everybody in this country has the right to under federal law. And there's a website, and trust me, I'm not giving out a website that is going to result in someone buying something. There's one federally mandated website where you can claim your free credit reports that you're entitled to under federal law, and that's annualcreditreport.com, annualcreditreport.com, and don't misspell it because you'll end up at what's referred to as a squatter website. Mm. So get that right, annualcreditreport.com. Everybody can claim a copy of their credit report from all three of the credit bureaus once every 12 months from that website. And you can stagger them. You don't have to claim them all at once, or you can pull them all at once if you choose to do so. Despite the fact that we've had that right for about a decade now, you'd be surprised and saddened, I think, to learn that only about 4% of free credit reports are claimed every single year, which means 96% of the free credit reports that we're entitled to go unclaimed, and they don't roll over like cell phone minutes. You either claim them or you forego your right to see them. So that's what I would consider to be kind of like entry-level credit monitoring, because you're really just looking at it from time to time to see if anything is unusual. Now, if you want to pay, you can actually pay for credit monitoring services that monitor all three of your credit reports in real time. And so any change on that report that would be indicative of fraud, so a new address, a new inquiry that indicates you're shopping for credit, a new account on your credit report, a sizable increase in the balance on one of your credit cards. All those things are possibly caused by identity theft, and most good credit monitoring services will alert you either with a text message or an email to let you know, hey, look, your Experian credit report just changed in this way. Is it true? Did you actually do this? If not, then you maybe have been the victim of identity theft. That's about as aggressive as you can get without actually going the full way and actually freezing your credit report.
Yeah. And if you do your own self-monitoring and you notice something weird on your credit report, it says, I don't know, bills that you haven't paid that you never had, what do you do?
Well, you're going to want to do a couple things. First off, if you're going to want to contact the credit reporting agency and let them know that something on there is possibly fraudulent. And when you do that, it triggers a variety of obligations for them. First off, they have to place a fraud alert on your credit report, and they also have to contact the other two credit reporting agencies to have them place fraud alerts on your credit report. So you don't have to do this times three. You just need to do it times one, and then they'll contact the other two. That's step one. Step two is you're going to also want to contact whoever the merchant is or the bank or the collection agency and let them know, hey, look, you're putting something on my credit report. This is not me. You have the wrong person. And put them on notice as well, because they have no idea until someone tells them mm-hmm. that it's a fraudulent account. So that's number two. Number three is you might actually be asked to file a police report, because fraud is a criminal. I mean, it is a crime. That is a fact. So you may actually have to go out and file a police report. And the reason for doing that, it's not to make your life more difficult, but a lot of people try to get stuff off their credit report by saying it was caused by fraud when in reality it wasn't caused by fraud. They just don't want to pay it. Mm-hmm. And so filing a police report, filing a police report knowingly and knowingly being dishonest, that is a criminal act. So that's kind of the way for the bureaus to separate the real fraud victims from those who are pretending to be fraud victims. Because if you're willing to go out and file a false police report and actually break the law, then, you know, more power to you. And you're going to need that police report, because that's going to be something that the credit bureaus and probably the lender is going to want to see before they'll stop pursuing you for the collection of the debt, and to extend the short-term temporary security or fraud alert to a more permanent, longer-lasting fraud alert on your credit file. And, by the way, good news. Here's the good news. It's good news in that if you have been a victim of identity theft verifiable, then that $10 fee I talked about for freezing your credit reports is waived. Mm-hmm. And you can actually freeze all of your credit reports for nothing, which is great, because that pretty much ends all the identity theft right there.
This is a credit edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with our guest, John Alzheimer. He is a nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft, preventing identity theft. And we welcome your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We've been talking about the security breach at Target. We're talking about credit cards versus debit cards, talking about ways to monitor or freeze your credit report. And we welcome your questions, too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
So I went down to my favorite store, picked out three or four shirts or more, a pair of pants and a striped tie, and the man came by and said, yes, sir, cash or charge.
This is a credit edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off this week. So we found a great guest with information and advice on a very timely topic. We are talking with a credit expert, someone who can comment on the security breach at Target, someone who can answer your questions about what to do if you notice fraudulent charges on credit statements or on your credit report. How do we raise our credit scores anyway? We'll talk a little bit about that as well. But we have full lines, so let's go to the phones. John in Madison is with us. Hi, John.
Hi, Joey. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you, John?
I had a quick question. I've got a Bank of America MasterCard. It was through Bass Pro Shops. I got the credit card because it saved me $150 on a purchase. You know, it saved 10% on your first purchase. Mm-hmm. I've had it for about 3 years now, and it's my secondary credit card. I use an American Express as my primary. My question is, would it be worth just going ahead and canceling that credit card? I've always heard that once you have a line of credit, you want to keep it open. Would it be best for me to keep it open and not use it, close it, or continue to use it as a minor credit card after the American Express?
I would not close it, and I would not close it for a variety of reasons. A, if you're a sportsman and you like the rewards that you earn through Bass Pro Shops, then keep earning them. Mm-hmm. Two, and if you heard earlier in the show, you heard me talk about how your liability for fraudulent use of that card is essentially non-existent. So the argument, well, someone could steal it someday, is not a very good argument. So there, you really have no liability issues. And three, and you alluded to hearing about how closing a line could hurt you. That's true. One of the most important measurements in credit scoring systems is the relationship between balances on credit cards and the credit limits on credit cards. It's called, the technical term is called revolving utilization, but it's referred to as the debt-to-limit ratio. That unused card, because it sounds like you use it sparingly, that unused card has some amount of a credit limit that is actually helping your credit score because there's no balance associated with the account. So closing that card eliminates the value of that limit in your credit score. So really you're left with nothing but the Amex card, which is perfectly fine. Amex is a great credit card issuer, as is B of A. So if I were you, you know, my father used to always tell me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it kind of sounds like things ain't broke. So if I were you, I wouldn't fix something by simply closing the card, because you actually might shoot yourself in the foot by doing so. And look, someday you may want the added capacity of having that secondary card. If you're worried about fraud, don't. But if you really, really are, run it through the shredder, and then no one will, the card doesn't exist any longer. And if you ever want a replacement card, I'm sure the bank will be happy to send you one.
Okay, John?
Do we have time for one more quick question?
Sure.
All right. I have thought about, I don't use the Bank of America or the Bass Pro Shop rewards. I've never used those. So I have thought about getting rid of it and replacing it with a card from like my checking or my Navy Federal Credit Union. Would that be, since I'm going to keep the credit limit, that'll go towards that debt to balance ratio, whatever. Would that be a half-half, you know, no gain, no loss scenario?
Yeah, if by the way, yet another very reputable lender, Navy Federal Credit Union. If you're gonna close that card, if you're just dedicated to closing the card, I would wait till you get the new card before closing the old card. And if you're going to be financing a home or buying a car or doing anything major in 2014 that requires financing, I would hold on to that card until you close on whatever loan you're going to be applying for. And look, most people are like, well, I know I'm not going to be applying for credit next year, so it really doesn't matter. But here's the counter argument. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know if you're going to have to buy a new car because your car breaks down. You don't know if you're going to have to make a major purchase because your air conditioner unit blows up and you've got to buy a new. You just don't know what you don't know. So if there's nothing wrong with that card, they're not hitting you with an annual fee, it's just sitting there taking up almost, you know, no space in your wallet, there's really not a downside to leaving it open. And having the capacity there for a rainy day is not a bad thing.
Thanks, John, for the call. Ian in Madison is with us now. Hi, Ian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I understand you haven't had a credit card yet.
No, I'm 23 years old. I've never had a credit card, which I'm extremely lucky to do so, I guess. I just thought, you know, I shouldn't get one if I can't pay it off every month, so I didn't do it.
I wish more people had that attitude. That's a fantastic attitude. I know, yeah, I can't pay it off every month, so I'm not going to even get myself in that or expose myself to it.
Right. So my credit was actually kind of destroyed by some medical bills I had, but I'm finally in a position where I can start building on my credit again, and I was wondering if you had any advice for getting my first credit card.
Yeah, if you want to get a credit card, and remember, credit cards are only expensive if you carry balances. That's one of the great – credit cards are vilified almost mercilessly because of credit card debt and interest. And what people tend to forget, especially those who do the vilifying, is that a credit card is the only quote-unquote credit where you can choose to get into debt or choose to not get into debt. If you go out and buy a car and take out a car loan, you're in debt. If you go out and buy a home and get a mortgage, you're in debt. If you go out and get a student loan, you're in debt. But you can actually go and open a credit card and not be in any debt. So before we beat up on credit cards too much, let's think about it from that perspective. If you're going to choose to open a credit card and you know that you're going to carry a balance, then you're going to want to open one with a credit union. And the reason you're going to want to open one with a credit union is because the interest rates tend to be lower on credit union-issued credit cards than those issued by the big mega banks and the big mega credit card issuers. Your credit limit will likely not be as high than you would get with a mega bank, but your interest rate is definitely going to be lower. And if you've got good credit, you might even get sub 10 on the interest rate, which is pretty unheard of in the world of credit cards. Usually you're around 15 to 16% on an interest rate. But no, absolutely nothing wrong with having a card. Just use it sparingly for necessities. Don't use it as a stopgap to income or to a supplement to your income. And there are plenty of cards that don't have annual fees. The rumor that those cards don't exist any longer is baloney. You can easily find a card without an annual fee. And then truly the only cost of having the card is is voluntary if you choose to carry a balance.
Okay. So you suggest going through a credit union?
Absolutely. And it's so easy, and I'll be very honest with you, I'm not terribly familiar with the credit union environment in Wisconsin, but it's very, very easy to find a credit union where you meet their membership qualifications, either state employee or you live in a certain community or you work for a certain type of company. I'd be very surprised if you were unable to find a credit union where you met their membership requirements.
Good luck, Ian. Thanks very much for the call. Well, you touched on it, but let's follow up a caller who couldn't stand the line, wanted to know why people need credit cards anyway.
That's a very good point. Here's a couple of answers. Have you ever tried to buy anything online without plastic? And I know you can use debit cards, but I think we've already identified some of the issues with exposure. Second, it's portable capacity. It's safer than carrying around cash, because if someone grabs a $20 from you, that's gone. If someone charges $20 on your credit card, that's you're not going to be liable for it. For those of you who travel for business, I travel extensively for business, and there's no way in the world I could exist without a credit card because of the portable capacity, the protections, and then frankly the rewards that I get for using the cards. So again, credit cards are a personal choice. There are some people who are vehemently opposed to them, and I understand why, because interest is very expensive. And then there are some people who pay their bill every single month in full, and they don't have interest, and I don't even know what the interest rate is on my credit cards because I don't pay interest because I don't revolve balances, so the interest rate is immaterial to me. But again, it's a personal choice. Not everyone can manage them properly, and like the prior caller, I commend him for being self-aware and honest with himself enough to be able to say, I don't have one because I'm not sure I could pay it in full every month. That's the type of person who shouldn't have a credit card, because the debt becomes very expensive to service.
Kurt emails, after using my debit card to receive cash at an ATM in a strip mall, my bank called me the next day to verify a suspicious transaction, which I did not make. The bank's fraud specialist said it is best to avoid using these ATMs and only use ones available at banks or credit unions.
Yep.
Is this true? He goes on to say.
It is true. I don't know if you've ever heard the word skimmer before, but a skimmer is an electronic device that is either mounted over the slot of an ATM machine where you're sliding your card, or it can be a handheld portable device. So if you can remember what an old pager used to look like, that's also what a skimmer looks like as a standalone device. What a skimmer does is when you swipe your card through it, it essentially remembers all of the information about that particular card. And skimmers are, in some cases, installed over ATM machines by fraudsters, or they're carried around by waiters in restaurants, and when they disappear for 5 minutes with your card, they're just sliding it through the skimmer. And once the skimmer gets full, they can turn around and sell the thing for thousands and thousands of dollars to fraudsters, who then clone credit cards by putting the account information on new cards with the magnetic strip and then going out and trying to use the card. That's what's happening in the Target data breach, by the way. It's the same thing. They're trying to recreate the cards and then going out and using them. So if you walk into one of these retail stores or convenience stores where you see an ATM machine kind of sitting between the beer and the soft drinks, and you can see a phone line attached to the back of it to the wall, I'd avoid it. If you're going to a bank where it's installed in the side of the building with security cameras all around, while your exposure isn't 100% eliminated, that's certainly going to work the odds in your favor.
I did get a call. This was a couple of years ago, I think, from the cardholder or the card issuer of a Target Visa card that I had to warn me or ask me if I had made a 96-cent purchase at a California florist, which I had not.
Yep.
And
did you buy one rose?
Right. And apparently they realize this is sort of a test that the scammer is doing.
That's exactly right. I had one where the fraudster ran my card through a parking meter for $1.49. And what really all they're trying to do is see if they have a fish on the other end of the line, to see if they have a valid credit card. And then if they have a valid card, the next charge will likely be slightly higher. And then if that one clears, then they'll just start peppering the card to death. And that's actually the fact that your issuer notified you of that particular transaction means that they have some pretty sophisticated fraud models that monitor transactions. And if the transaction is too atypical, then they're going to notify you normally by the phone, asking you to call the fraud specialist, and they'll ask you to verify certain charges. And of course, in that case, I have to imagine they closed your card and reissued you a new one.
That's right.
Because you knew that something was going wrong there.
Well, we have lots of callers and emailers regarding freezing your credit report, which we've discussed, but apparently some follow-up questions. Mark in Wausau.
Good morning. What steps can a person take to freeze one's credit report? Through the bank or a credit union or through the state of Wisconsin? Or
Neither of the three. It's actually very easy, sir. All you have to do, when you're freezing a credit report, you're freezing it directly with the credit reporting agencies. So, and there are three of them. Equifax, which is down here with me in Atlanta. There is TransUnion, which is in Chicago. And then there's Experian, which is in Costa Mesa, California. You're going to have to do this independently at all three of the credit reporting agencies. Let Google do the work for you. So just Google security freeze Equifax, security freeze Experian, and security freeze TransUnion. Make sure you end up at their website, so experian.com/something. And if you have not been a victim and you're a resident of Wisconsin, you're going to have to pay $10 a piece to do that. But then you can won't have to worry about your credit report being involved in any fraud, because no one's going to have access to it, including you. You won't even have access to it. You'll set up a login and a PIN at each of these three websites, and when you do want to thaw the credit reports because, you say, for example, you want to apply for a car loan or something in the future, you're essentially going to have to go in and log in and then put your credit reports back into circulation before even you will be able to go apply for credit.
Yeah, Mark, good luck with that. We also had an email from a listener who said, I went to the website Annual Credit. She gave the wrong name.
And
say it again.
Yep, did exactly what I told y'all not to do. It's annualcreditreport.com. That is it. If it's annualreport.com, creditreport.com, that's not the site. It's annualcreditreport.com. It's three words. annualcreditreport.com. If you spell it wrong, you're going to end up at a squatter website. There are companies out there that have snapped up all those, you know, one-off incorrect domains, misspellings of words and things like that, and they put fee-based services on those websites to fool you and almost punish you for typing in the wrong domain. It's annualcreditreport.com.
Boy, this hour just flew by. I'm wondering if, especially since some people are still concerned about that Target breach, if you just have some last words of advice, the lesson learned from all of this.
Yeah, and this Target breach, it underscores the importance of a couple of things. A, becoming considerably more engaged in our transactions than we currently are. Waiting for your paper statement at the end of the month to see what was billed during the prior 30 days is a bad idea. That's not good enough. You need to be way more engaged. Every two or three days, log into the account, see what's posted, see what's pending. Make sure, especially during the holiday season when you're using your card a lot to make tons of purchases, you just want to make sure that everything is correct. Number two, don't freak out. You have considerable protections under federal law. It's very likely that you're not going to have to pay a dime even if your card has been compromised. It's just going to be a little bit of inconvenience, but nothing is going to come out of your pocket. I promise you. The law protects you in that manner. But you should also be thankful for those of you who chose to use credit cards at Target versus debit cards at Target, because it's not your money that has been compromised. It's the bank's money. And trust me, they're more interested in getting that back than you are. If it was your money, you'd be more interested in getting that back.
I want to thank you very much for being with us, and I hope you'll join us again sometime.
I would love to. You guys have a fantastic Christmas.
You too. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Talking with John Ulsheimer, a nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft. He is the president of Ulsheimer Group, LLC, and works for CreditSesame.com and is the credit blogger for Mint.com. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There is much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.